Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Ernest Hemingway is rightly celebrated for his indelible novels, but the 20th century titan was writing short stories from his high school days until almost the end. Many are well known to readers, like the Nick Adams stories and The Snows of Kilimanjaro. Others, not as much. Like with his most famous novels, Hemingway was an inveterate editor of his short stories, often returning to revise the text after years. And now you can see that rigorous process play out in the Hemingway Library edition of The Short Stories, published by Scribner. The book features a foreword by Sean Hemingway, the author's grandson and a curator at the Met. Sean Hemingway, welcome back to The Roundtable.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to be here with you.
Give us a sense of the role short stories played in your grandfather's life.
Well, short stories were an important part of my grandfather's literary career. He started with short stories, and at first, when he was young and in his 20s, he didn't think that he might even be able to write a novel. He wasn't sure, but he was writing longer and longer short stories, and he thought, well, he needed to take a crack at it, which of course he did with Sun Also Rises. But he continued to write short stories even after he wrote novels, and he really enjoyed the genre.
Was the market for short stories different in his day, especially early on?
You know, short stories have never really been, for most writers, as profitable as writing novels. Many of his first short stories were turned down when he was writing in Paris and sending them out to different magazines. He had a hard time at first publishing in the United States, and some of his first stories were published in Europe and Germany and in Paris. I think the life of a writer is always difficult, so I think that hasn't changed so much since my grandfather's day, but he had many, many rejections early on.
You write the introduction to this collection, and you sort of separate his short story work into three distinct sections. Could you take us through those and the timeline of these works?
Sure. In this new Hemingway Library edition, I've included 26 of my grandfather's short stories, and I divided it into three sections primarily to give people a sense that Ernest Hemingway, who's now known as this sort of towering literary giant, really developed his craft. And so the first section really just has two works of juvenilia when he was really even in high school and just still a teenager. In fact, his first published short story, Judgment of Manitou, is included in the edition. Not so well known to people. It was published in his high school magazine, The Tabula. And then another previously unpublished short story, which is only preserved in one draft, handwritten on American Red Cross stationery, written probably at the time that he was wounded in Milan in the Milan hospital. And it's a really interesting story about the end of World War I, and undoubtedly partially inspired by his own experiences there in Milan. But what's interesting about these stories, I think, is it shows they're not anything as accomplished as his later work, and the work that appears in the second section of this new edition, the Hemingway Library edition, features some of his most well-known stories and stories from the 1920s when he was living and writing in Paris. And you can see how much he developed his craft during that time. And it was really, Paris was really his great training ground, where he was living and learning from many great writers and artists who were living in Paris at that time in the 1920s. A kind of remarkable time to be living in Paris. And so he learned from people like Gertrude Stein and Ford Madox Ford, who he worked with, James Joyce, and many others. F. Scott Fitzgerald, too, of course, and there's one story in this book called 50 Grand, which F. Scott Fitzgerald, who was an accomplished short story writer himself, and really his career was ahead of Ernest's, he made editorial suggestions to him, and he suggested he cut the beginning of that story. And Hemingway always regretted this, and he writes about it also in an introduction that we include in this new edition called The Art of the Short Story, which he wrote in 1959. And in this new edition, we have also the beginning that he cut, so you can, which he kept his entire life, and the reader can compare that original beginning to the one that was published and see which is better for themselves.
And the third section?
And the third section really looks at the next stage in his life when he moves back to the United States and is writing in Key West and then out west too, and in the American West and in Cuba. And so that third section looks at his stories from this period, which include actually some of his most famous works like The Short Happy Life of Francis Macomber and The Snows of Kilimanjaro, works inspired by his African safari of 1933 to 1934, as well as some of interesting works inspired by his time covering the Spanish Civil War.
What did you learn about the way he went about editing and reshaping as you were gathering a lot of the materials here?
Well, it's fascinating really to look at his manuscripts, and that's what this new edition does. Is it allows the reader to kind of pull back the veil and have a look at his creative process. And you can see that he was constantly revising and improving his texts. And so with some of the stories, there are as many as five drafts included in the edition, and you can see how he kept editing and honing the story to make it better and better, often cutting material and making it tighter and more concise, which is part of the great quality of his writing. He had this iceberg principle theory that one could cut material that like an iceberg whose grace is dictated by the fact that 7/8 of it lies beneath the water. His stories also, he could have that material under the surface. He could have it in there and have cut it, and yet it would still feel like it was there, as opposed to someone who didn't know what they were writing, and they leave something out, and it's a hole in the story. As you mentioned, I work at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York as a curator of Greek and Roman art, and looking at antiquity where we have so little preserved, you know, such a small fraction from that thousands of years ago, I really appreciate his ideas about this, because trying to write about antiquity myself, when we have so much that we don't know about, you have to be so careful about what you write so that you don't write it incorrectly.
When you're a Hemingway and you write an adverb, does something like kind of jolt through you?
Yeah, it's, you know, you can see it. His writing is amazing how he does. He tends to cut out adverbs, or his choice of words is very careful. And what's amazing, I think, in these Hemingway Library editions, and this is now the fourth one, but the first on the first stories, is that we can see how carefully he worked at it. So sometimes he writes with a lot of adjectives, but he ends up cutting them or choosing ones very carefully. And we see how hard he worked at his craft. So he was obviously very talented and a genius in many ways, but he also worked very hard at getting the text right. And he loved it. I think it was one of the things he loved most about life was writing and being able to write well. But he also thought it was one of the most difficult things to do in life, and he loved doing it well.
So what are some of your favorites of the short stories?
Well, this collection includes some of my very favorites, such as The Short Happy Life of Francis Macomber, which was also my grandfather's, one of his very favorites. When asked, you know, what is his best story, he frequently said that was as, you know, as good as any of the others. I also love the story of the butterfly in the tank, which is about which is the last story in the volume, and a story he wrote in 1938 during the time of the Spanish Civil War, and it really captures the way the tensions of war and sometimes the dire consequences that come out of that. Another story that I love is included in the edition is The Killers, which is really the first great American gangster story, written in the 1920s when American gangsters were just really coming into their own in Chicago with Al Capone and others. And Hemingway wrote the story actually in Madrid, the main draft of it, in a marathon session in one day, which is kind of amazing. And the manuscript is actually dated with the hours of that day on it. What's so powerful about the Killers, too, is the way he uses dialogue to move the story, and that's one of his contributions to the art of the short story. At the time, many short stories didn't rely on dialogue so much, and he showed that one could have a story almost entirely of dialogue and that it could work very well.
Tell us a little bit about Nick Adams, who is the main character in a whole batch of Hemingway short stories. Do you know how he settled on that name and who this character was?
Yes, Nick Adams is one of the main characters in a series of stories that my grandfather wrote, and several of these are included in the Hemingway Library edition. In fact, one of his greatest short stories and another one of my favorites is Big Two-Hearted River, which features Nick coming back from World War I and psychologically damaged from that experience and reconnecting with nature and life through this trekking up into the upper Michigan and fishing this wonderful river for trout. And many of the Nick Adams stories involve this Nick Adams, who was a young man growing up in Michigan and Chicago, and the figure is loosely based on my grandfather's own experiences as a boy, having been growing up in Chicago and spending his summers in Michigan, upper Michigan. It's wonderful and interesting to see in these stories how Ernest Hemingway used his own experiences, and the Nick Adams stories are a really good example of this, to create fictional stories. And so he built on his own experiences to create much better, even perfected stories of this character, Nick Adams, who was based on him, but not, but still a fictional character. You can see the kind of the difficult line that this crosses in another one of the stories that's included in the edition called Fathers and Sons, in which Hemingway even sort of makes an explicit reference between himself and Nick Adams. The name for Adams Nick Adams is interesting, and my uncle Patrick, in his foreword to this book, talks about how he is certain that Ernest Hemingway was definitely inspired by the writer Henry Adams for the name Nick Adams in his short stories, the Nick Adams stories. Not entirely sure where Nick comes from, but scholars have made various ideas about this. But it's interesting that there are literary allusions in many of Hemingway's short stories.
Since the last time we've talked, I was actually in Illinois, just outside Chicago, to visit the Hemingway birthplace, which is a tourist destination for Hemingway fans and so on. The Hemingway Museum is there, too. And getting ready to speak with you, I was thinking about how, for the average fan of Hemingway, that's a day trip. But for you, places like that are your ancestors and their family history. So I was wondering if it's ever a burden to have such a famous and meaningful grandfather as you try to live your own life.
Well, I think for me, I'm very proud to be associated, to have him as my grandfather. He died before I was born, so I didn't know him personally. But I've come to know him, through stories from my parents, my dad, and my mom, who also knew him at the end of his life as his secretary, and my uncles, and especially my Uncle Patrick, who I've worked with now on these volumes for many years. So I'm proud, and I think he is such a great writer, and must have been such an incredible person to know. Going to those places, and I've visited just most of the Hemingway haunts. Obviously, I think that for each person they do evoke a different feeling, but for me they're very interesting. And I think especially to go to his home in Cuba, at the Finca Vigía, you see where he lived, and it's actually still, it's a museum now, but it's filled with all of his personal belongings, because he left really with just a suitcase and expected to come back and never did. So that's very special. But also when you go down to Key West or you go out to the home in Ketchum, one also gets a sense of these places where he lived, or even the apartment in New York where my grandmother Mary, godmother Mary Hemingway, his last wife, lived as well with him.
This is the latest in a series of the Hemingway Library reissues, and I'm wondering what's next on the list.
Well, this is the latest in a series of editions, and the first one was unofficial. First one was A Movable Feast, the restored edition back in 2009, and then we did A Farewell to Arms, which was fascinating because of all the he rewrote the ending 39 times, and in fact I found in the Kennedy Library 47 different versions of the ending.
Finally got it right, right?
Yes, and he finally got it right, and it really is an amazing and powerful ending to the book. And then we did the Sun Also Rises, which is fascinating because he cut two chapters from the beginning at the very galley stage, also on the recommendation of F. Scott Fitzgerald. And before the short stories, we had The Green Hills of Africa, which is also one of my personal favorites because it's the sort of non-fictional story of my grandfather and my actual grandmother, Pauline Pfeiffer Hemingway, on safari in Africa in the 30s, and that was so powerful, I think, for my uncle and my dad as boys growing up with all these trophies from that great safari. And in fact, both my uncle and my dad went on to be professional hunters in Africa, in East Africa, for quite a number of years, my uncle especially for over 20 years. But the next edition in the series will be For Whom the Bell Tolls, which is, of course, one of his greatest novels, and one that I think is going to be very interesting to look at because it represents him also at the very top of his writing game.
I can't wait. Well, we've been speaking with Sean Hemingway about the short stories of Ernest Hemingway, now out in the new Hemingway Library edition from Scribner. Sean Hemingway is the author's grandson and is also a curator at the Met. Well, we'll continue the conversation when that one comes out in a couple of years. For now, I know you've got your hands full with it. And Sean Hemingway, thank you so much for coming back.
Ian, it's been great to be here again with you at the Roundtable, and thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.